Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of Experience Kills. I'm your host Ben, and with me today, a returning favourite. He's been away for a little while, but I'm welcoming back Cameron. Easy for me to say.
Yeah, thanks for that stunning introduction.
I know, just well-oiled machine here at Experience Kills. You know, I can barely speak, you would see today. It's a Thursday, that's my excuse and I'm sticking to it.
Midweek, we're all dying, bring on the weekend.
That's it. Focused on that weekend, man. That's what's getting me through. But we have convened here late on a Thursday evening to talk about Ash of God's Redemption, because it comes out, well, as you're listening, it's out today, the day the recording has gone up here, and it's out on consoles after debuting on PC in 2018, I believe like March, April time, early 2018, so it's been available on PC for a while, but we have a console port here we're going to talk about. I've been playing on Xbox One, it's also available on PS4, and I believe also Nintendo Switch, which makes a lot of sense when you look at the game that we are playing here, and you can see it running in the background here. If you're watching on YouTube, and if you're not, well, if you're checking out the audio version, you'll just have to imagine the beautiful visuals, won't you, Cameron?
Oh, and they are beautiful.
It's got a really like lovely 2D animated style to it. That's, you know, got a real high fidelity to it. You know, no pixel art here. You know, really sort of handcrafted, and it draws a comparison to another game of a very similar genre, because we're dealing with here a roguelike turn-based RPG, kind of crossed with a visual novel, and you can't help but draw that comparison to the Banner Saga. Have you played or seen any of the Banner Saga games, Cameron?
No, I haven't, but, I mean, if they play anything like the ones I've been looking at lately, kind of be interested. I've always liked the strategy games, turn-based strategy as well, and to mix it in with, like, an RPG element and the kind of storytelling it's got alongside it as well, it's actually, I don't think I've actually played anything like it.
Okay, so you've not come across the Banner Saga. That's fair enough. I mean, that is also a turn-based tactical RPG with a heavy emphasis on narrative, with a sort of painterly, very clean-looking 2D art style. I mean, this game, at first glance, could actually be mistaken for the Banner Saga. It has perhaps a slightly more muted colour palette in places, but even then, if as you're watching the video here, you can see that it has plenty of, like, you know, visual treats and hits to look at as well. And, you know, they acknowledge this on their website, the guys behind Ash of God's Redemption, and they say, you know, it was an inspiration, as it were, and, you know, any similarity should only be considered flattery, sort of thing. Which I suppose is fair enough. These guys are a small team from hailing from Russia originally, with a base in Cyprus. But you know, that's cool. I always love talking about indie games which are from parts of the world you may not expect, because they often bring a different perspective, and that is something that is definitely apparent here in Ash of Gods, because I think the thing that really stands out for me playing this game is the storytelling, is the characters, that narrative and that setting, because they all feel pretty unique. We're in a kind of low fantasy setting in which we have not lots of different, like, races, like elves and dwarves and stuff. Everything's mm-hmm. human, everything's people, except for these, like, fallen angel type characters that you are having a conflict with. I don't want to spoil any of the twists of the story here, but your party is human, and it's the roguelike element comes into play, where there's permadeath aspects, which draws comparison for me with another very famous franchise of games, which are the Fire Emblem games. Have you played any Fire Emblem games, Cameron? Hoping he says yes this time.
I believe there might have been one on the DS, am I mistaken?
No, there was, yep.
I think I may have played one in my youth, but because it brings up such a vague memory, I feel like I'm just disappointing you, and I might just go back and not come back and do voice work anymore, you know, because I just
looking,
keep referring stuff I have no idea about.
Looking through the fuzzy mists of time, back into his youth of many, many decades ago, Cameron can barely recollect Fire Emblem, it turns out, on the DS. But let me put it this way, Fire Emblem are these, again, tactical, turn-based, JRPG sort of style games, and for them, it's all about human characters, and it's about permadeath and roguelike elements, so that's clearly inspired the guys here behind Ash of Gods a great deal. And the way it sort of manifests in Ash of Gods' gameplay is through like that you can get downed at sort of four, I think it's three or four times, and then that character will be permanently dead from your party.
I mean, I've dealt with permadeath a couple of times, but like, for your entire party can basically get wiped out in one kind of fell swoop. And would you have to then like recruit more people?
I don't think it would ever be that severe, because basically when you're downed in a fight, they can come back in the subsequent fight. But I think if everybody gets downed in a fight, then you're going to have to replay the fight. So I don't think that when you're downed, that's not instant death. You can be sort of downed multiple times before you do get fully killed off. You get like injured, and you have chances to heal your characters as well between fights, like when they're at the bonfire sort of situation, because it's, you know, you're questing across the land here.
Of course.
As you have to do. You have to do in these types of games. And you can then spend some of your resources to heal up your characters. Obviously, if you don't do that, they have a much better chance of being killed, but it's kind of a risk-reward, because you need the resources for traveling as well and for getting around the continent on your quest to try and save humanity from the Reaping, I believe it's what it was called in the game. It's this interesting mechanic, because it creates a sense of bonding with these characters in the game, because you're going to spend more time chatting to them between fights, because you get to know them. And then when you do put them in, maybe they're one more down away from getting permanently killed, but they're also your best fighter, you know, and they're leveled up. So you have to decide, do you want to take that risk, or do you want to bench them and try and bring somebody else up to our, you know, and level them up? So it's this interesting balance. You know, managing this party as you kind of quest across the land, very much in a Fire Emblem style. So that sort of connects nicely up with the strength of this game, like I said, which is the setting, the writing. I will say, though, if you're not ready to do a great deal of reading, you will maybe find this game quite tiring, because nothing is voiced. And you compare it to the new Fire Emblem on Nintendo Switch, which is entirely voiced.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a lot of dialogue in that game, and it's all voice. Nothing here is voiced in this game. Obviously, it's a tiny team, and that would be a huge ask for them to do, but it does mean you're staring at your screen reading just oodles of story. Dialogue, and sometimes scene-setting stuff as well. It's just so much reading. And one of the problems I actually noticed was the port of this onto console isn't necessarily the best, because sometimes the text is so infinitesimally small, it's almost impossible to read. And normally I don't have a problem with this in games, even with games where people complain about the text size. I remember recently people were moaning about the text size in the game Outer Wilds, which is the new Obsidian RPG. I never had an issue with it. I didn't think it was that small on my big TV. But this stuff is so small, and you can't zoom in, and there's no setting for it. It doesn't happen for all of the text in the game, but at certain times when the text is overlaid on, motif or map, it's almost impossible to read, which makes kind of knowing what you want to do and what you want to pick on the screen really difficult, and unduly so, I think it's fair to say.
Personally, I don't like playing a game without a subtitle option, so because growing up in a household of like three other siblings, two very loud parents, and I want to play a video game, I need to be able to read what they're saying, so I'm used to just having subtitles on everything. Not because I'm going deaf, but because no one else shuts up.
For me, I pretty much always play video games with subtitles as well. And I think I just do it because sometimes I'm not necessarily giving what's being said my full attention. So I might find if I'm seeing it as well, it sticks a bit better if I'm playing a game. But this isn't so much subtitles that you can't read. This is more like
game mechanics?
Yeah, like context-sensitive text that's coming up on the screen to maybe tell you, oh, this is a location, or this is a person you can talk to. You just can't read what it says.
Press Y to kill your friend, press square to kill yourself. Wait,
oh, no!
Which one's which? Oops.
To be fair, I don't think it was ever anything that critical, and it is something that could easily, I think, be addressed in a patch. It does feel like something that's just sort of falling through the cracks. I don't, you know, a small team probably didn't do a lot of QA on this, and that's fair enough. So the one big element of the game is the story, is the reading, is the setting and the narrative. The other big element is this turn-based combat. And for the most part, you know, that the mechanics of different classes, and I've already talked about the permadeath risk reward, and, you know, you've got the kind of moving the chess pieces around the playing field and flanking enemies and attacking them in various ways and doing power attacks and stuff. That all makes perfect sense. But once again, I've found there has been a problem, I think, in the port to the console here. The controls are just not very clear. Even when being tutorialized and taken through the initial onboarding of how to use it, I found it quite sort of complicated and also just not responsive on the controller. I couldn't work out for quite a while what I needed to do to actually select a character to move them, and then I struggled with moving them. Like, it worked sort of like half the time, and I slowly over the course of a few hours kind of got the hang of it, but it was a really kind of arduous process for what should be a very simple mechanic. You did get look at Fire Emblem. I mean, that just works, the way they move around the battlefield, how they, you know, kick off their powers, all of that's obviously in our control, and it just works like effortlessly. It's completely intuitive, where I found the controls here for Ash of Gods really kind of like I was just constantly hitting this wall, this barrier for enjoyment, which was really frustrating.
Oh, that's a shame. That was actually going to be my next question, is how the you know the movement and everything transfer over onto Gonza. It's always a shame when something like that does let the whole game down. I had some similar problems moving. I'm trying to remember what I was trying to play actually quite recently. I think it might have been a port onto one of the PlayStation, one of like the kind of like Age of Mythology, Age of Empires sort of style game, but I couldn't work the damn game worth a damn with a controller compared to just pointing and clicking with a mouse. Maybe I'm just all thumbs, but like theoretically that should help when I'm using your controller, but still. kind of just shot my argument in the foot there, didn't I?
We often review on here console editions of RTSs now, and other strategy games, the city builders, and for the most part those ports work really well nowadays. Like it's like the developers have kind of got the hang of how it should work now, and it kind of just does. But something about the way they did it here in Ash of Gods, there's a sort of system in play where at the beginning of each turn you can decide which character to move against the AI, against your opponents, and you get to pick from any characters that haven't moved already. And I found that really strange, because most of the time when you play a game like this you have a move order, so it's kind of like the enemies move and then dependent on, I don't know, stats or positioning or class, you know, you'll be given a character to move yourself instead of being able to pick one. And that actually, it took me a while to get used to that. I was like, why can't I move this guy? Well, I've either already moved them or I'm trying to move someone, and I was trying to work out who I had selected, and it wasn't always very clear who I had selected and what they could do. And then I struggled to actually be able to move them, and then there's different movement radiuses, and if you move further than the blue radius, it also uses your action points, you can't do an attack. So there's all these kind of elements and systems at play which would normally work, but I feel like more thought could have gone into mapping this to a controller and then also communicating with the player how it works on a turn-by-turn basis, just reminding you of things and how they would do. There was very little in the way of tooltips or on-screen kind of reminders of how things would work. Yeah. Even when I had like a 4-minute movement clock, right? You have to do stuff. And I counted the whole thing down, just not knowing what to do, unable to move anyone. And I was just like, and that was like my first ever battle, which isn't a great way of onboarding a player. Yeah. And I ended up having to restart the whole battle because I just didn't know how to do it, even though I just sat through the tutorial.
And not only that, but obviously that's also going to cause a problem if you can't actually read how to actually move a person either with the tiny subtitles.
Yes, now that's a very good point, yeah. And it's a shame because I actually like the balance in this game of the combat. It's a nice sort of difficulty level to it. It's not too easy, but it's not ridiculously punishing. You always feel like you know what you got to do. And then that balances out with what is the visual novel aspects of the game. Now, they actually had, for Ash of God's Redemption, a Polish novelist write the whole story for the game, bespoke, created a whole universe for it, and you can tell someone has really constructed this world, and I do want to know what's going to happen, and I want to find out what happens to these characters, and it propels you through in a really great way. So when you hit these mechanical roadblocks, it's very frustrating, and it's a real shame because you just want to get in there. There is one mechanic that's been added here, which I did feel kind of was a bit out of place. So on top of this turn-based tactical RPG stuff, and on top of the visual novel, we have CCG mechanics, Cameron, which is kind of weird.
CCG, break it down.
So, collectible card game. So you also have deck of cards that kind of give you magical powers that you can use in the battles. And you can find these cards around the world, and you sometimes get them as quest rewards, and you can sometimes purchase them. And then you can build a deck which you can use throughout your fights, and different cards will trigger on different turns. Usually later turn cards will be more powerful. And I just felt like that whole mechanic of bringing in a CCG element felt a bit pointless. It's like, why, if I want to use magic, why don't I just have a magic using class? Or just give me like spells on a weapon wheel or something, you know?
Not
cards. It felt strangely out of place. They do a decent job of contextualizing them within the narrative and within the story when they're introduced to you, and you're like, oh, okay, I get it. That sure, why not? That can work in this world. But it just felt a bit shoehorned in for the sake of it. Like, someone on the team was like, ooh, I want to do a CCG as well. And they were like, okay, Jim, go for it.
I'm going through The Witcher 3 currently, and they've got Gwent as their CCG game. And
Gwent is amazing. Don't criticise Gwent.
I was going to say, but I mean, like, throwing that into the middle of, like, Age of Empires or, you know, Fire Emblem, it would look quite out of place. You're quite right. It does sound a bit weird.
It does feel like that. It's interesting. It feels like, when you think about the timeline, they could well have been playing The Witcher 3 when they were making this game, and somebody went, do you know what? Let's put a card game in like they've got in The Witcher 3, because it's awesome. Especially as The Witcher 3 is kind of from Poland, and these guys are like some Russians and Polish people.
Oh,
it's
true,
like, maybe they even knew them, and it was like, oh man, let's do this. Let's do the same thing you guys are doing. I don't know. I'm just guessing. It just feels a bit out of place.
Just imagine at the pub, and they're just like, you know what your game needs? Cards.
Yeah, it's like they got one of the guys to test it, and they were just like, nah, not enough cards, bruv. You need more cards.
You need more cards.
Get more cards in there. Yeah.
Yeah, the main guy who made Gwent. His legacy is the only thing he made is Gwent, and he's going, yeah, you need cards, mate.
So, I mean, this game, the other kind of, you could sort of criticize it for this, but I actually quite liked it as well. Is the pace of it. It's really slow. So it kind of moves at this, because you're basically reading a novel, occasionally broken up with some fights. And I do mean occasionally. And this is indicated by when you first start the game, it gives you three options, basically. I can't remember exactly what they named them, but it was like story mode, normal mode, and Iron Man, kick your ass, you're gonna cry mode. So you've got the first mode, which is basically combat light. So you can skip the battles if you don't want to fight, and you can literally just read the story. The normal mode, which is what I played, so I had combat, or the you're going to get into a fight and probably die on the first one and have to restart it 12 times. And I think that sort of speaks a lot to the faith they have in their story, and it is very good. But because of that, it does move slowly because you're doing so much reading. And you know, there's an overworld map. You're like directing your party around to, you know, to go here to find this, go there. You know, typical kind of fantasy quest stuff, which is elevated by the visual style and by the characters. The kind of overarching story concept with these sort of fallen angel deities who have lost all kind of faith in, you know, God, and are basically fucking up humans because they've got nothing better to do, is okay. And you know, they're doing their reaping, they're, you know, turning people into mindless zombies that just, well, not zombies, more like psychopaths that just want to murder everyone, and you know, you're the few people that haven't been affected, and you're trying to save the world. It's that's fairly conventional and rote. What for me was great was some of the characters and some of their interactions in the sense of a Fire Emblem game, where these games are really bolstered by those interactions and getting to know the characters involved. But then, yeah, you've got this combat and it's okay. I just wish it was a bit snappier, a bit sharper, a bit better tested on the controller. So that does pull the experience down a little bit in my mind. And then the other thing is you've got the Banner Saga, which has been out for a while now, which is out on over three games. There's a series of three games, many of which are available very, very cheaply. Not that this game is particularly expensive. It's getting a physical release. It's on disc. I believe you can be able to buy it for about 25 quid, which is a reasonable price. And the Banner Saga kind of has done this already, you know, with a better, you know, better gameplay mechanics. I think a slightly more interesting world because it has a more variety in races, and it's out there and it's been out there for a while. So I'm not sure who Ash of Gods is for. I'm not sure what the market is, because there are other examples of this, either the very polished Fire Emblem or the plucky and inventive Banner Saga, which kind of do things just as well, if not better, than Ash of Gods. It's not a bad game, it's just kind of unremarkable, and it's not particularly inventive because of those games already existing, and then it kind of falls down a bit because of its mechanics, which is a real shame.
Yeah, just kind of reminiscing on all of it together. It's, I'm not sure whether I want to give it a go myself, or if I on a console, or if I just want to, if I'm really going to enjoy it more on a PC or not. And from the sounds of it, it's going to be for me a PC job.
I think so. I think, and it's already, I think it was just on sale, 60% off on Steam. I think on PC, that's the kind of home for this game. There are great examples of these games on consoles, which I've now talked about at length. This is not a brilliant port. I think I probably would have enjoyed it a great deal more on PC, with the mouse and keyboard controls, just because I can see with this interface, I can see where I'd be clicking on icons instead of fighting my way around them using a controller. And that frustrates me, that because you can, they've just not put what seems like enough time and testing into the port onto controller. And that's a shame. So I think, are we at the end of another episode of Experience Kills Camp?
I would like to do another one. I will be back.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean the end for you forever, but yes, we will have you back for more. Absolutely, sir. I have been your host, Ben. With me today has been Cameron. You can find me at DIYE on Twitter. You can find us at Experience Kills on Twitter. But Cameron has made the very sensible decision to get his ass off social media, because frankly, what is the point? And I can't fight him for that. You can listen to this podcast in its entirety on various podcasting apps such as Spotify or iTunes or anywhere a good podcast is found if you don't have the time to sit and watch the video. If you are watching the video, please give us a like. We really appreciate that. And subscribe to the channel as well. That's all we ask. We don't stuff a Patreon down your face or beg for a PayPal payment or anything like that. Just a like and subscribe. That's not too much, is it, Cam?
No, it's not much at all, and I typically, even I listen to yours and Richard's editions on Spotify most of the time, and the Game of the Year episode, well, it's fantastic. Well done.
Oh, thank you very much. We wanted you for that, mate, but we just couldn't get our schedules to align, could we?
Yeah, couldn't sync up those calendars.
It's one of those things. Busy, busy lives we have as these older gentlemen of gaming. I think we are, aren't we? The older statesmen. So until next time, I am going to say bye-zy-bye.
Bon voyage, people.